Let's just begin. So thank you, everybody, for coming. Enjoy. Okay, Esther, Mordechai, and the balance of trusting Hashem versus taking action. So I'm sorry, Linda, we will not resolve all of the problems revolving around this, but sort of ground zero for this discussion often begins. I thought begins, but even beyond that, I noticed somebody else picked up on it as well. So I came across this past week. Chava and I happened to go by this farm sale. So I picked up this book by Chaim Jachter, wrote a book, Reason to Believe, Rational Explanations of Orthodox Jewish Faith. He really goes through with, and he's a very strict, sourced person, and I was thinking maybe we would save some of this over the course of the summer for some of the shiur and we give him the marv. But anyways, I always thought about this as this conflict of Esther and Mordechai, what's going on here as ground zero, and I see he actually calls it that. The starting point of how to discuss the balance of trusting Hashem versus taking action in a post-prophetic world, in the period after prophecy, he says, let's take a look at this story. So where does it begin from? So there, notice I had this source and the title of the shiur out before I discovered this book, but he made my life a lot easier. So it really appears around Perek Dalet. Where is Perek, the fourth chapter in Megillas Esther? What's going on there? So Haman has already gotten permission from Ahasuerus to do what he's plans on doing to the Jewish people. Mordechai gets wind of this. He's very scared. He starts wandering around in sackcloth. Esther finds out that uncle slash something else, Mordechai, is wandering around in sackcloth. She sends some clothes. She finds out what's going on. And that's really where we pick up. So Vayagid lo Mordechai. He said, why are you doing this? So Mordechai says to Hasach, this messenger, all that's going on, and the money which Haman gave to Ahasuerus in order to destroy the Jews. And he also gave this Hasach, he gave this courier, a copy of the edict that had been passed in order to go ahead and tell Esther. And not only that, and he to tell Esther, Lavo Elamelchis Chanenu Lokeshmo Fanavalama. And you, Hasach, give Esther this letter and tell Esther that she needs to go in front of the king and tell him what's up and convince the king to stop doing this. So this part of the, when you lean this part of the Megillah, it actually goes very quickly, most of the psukim are pretty brief. So Hasach tells Esther all the things that Mordechai said. Esther tells Hasach, go tell Mordechai that everybody knows that I can't just walk into the king, because anybody that goes into the king is going to be killed, and I have been called in for a while. I don't really know where I'm standing in terms of the king. I can't go ahead and do this. So Hasach goes back, tells Mordechai all these things that Esther said. So then Mordechai responds to Esther, don't think that you're going to be able to escape this. It could be that perhaps for this point that you are supposed to be coming, you and your people will be destroyed. The people, Revach Vatzalah, if this point you are in charge, success will come to the Jews no matter what, and you perhaps are going to be destroyed. So Esther goes back to Mordechai and says, okay, go gather everybody together and tell them to fast for 3 days, and on the third day I'm going to go into the king. And Mordechai did and told everything that Esther said. Okay? So let's take a step back from the story. It's unclear whether Esther knew what was going on. We don't have that clear. But whether she did or whether she didn't, they both start having a different thing in mind as to what's going to happen. Right? Mordechai's idea is Esther needs to find out about this, and when Esther finds out about this, immediately she's got to run to the king and tell the king, etc., and everything's going to be fine. Right? Esther's perspective, either she knows about it or as soon as she finds out about it, is I can't go into the king. I need to wait until the king calls me. So if you were to stop the story at that point, so Mordechai's plan is she's running into the king right now and yelling at him. And Esther's plan is, well, I'm just going to sit here and wait until Ahasuerus calls me, and at that point I'll be able to have this discussion with him and everything's going to be fine. When the perek is done, they actually both have a different plan. They agree on a different plan. What is their agreed upon plan? We're going to wait 3 days, and then I'm going to go ahead and talk to the king. Right? So that's the story there. Now, one continues through the story, and we see a little bit more as to what Esther's plan was. I mean, Esther was convinced, and Esther's really the one kind of who wins, even though Mordecai probably agreed to it, or at least figured that's the best he's going to do, and that's what's going to happen. So Esther goes, tells Ahasuerus, we need to have a party, and at that party is going to be me, you, and Haman. Right? And then everything, and then there's a second party, and then things carry on from there. So there is a question that Rabbi Jaffe discusses here of what's Haman's story? Rabbi Jaffe doesn't discuss it. The Gemara itself discusses it. The Gemara on your source sheet, right in the middle of the page, I didn't put a number there, but it says Tanu Rabbanan Marasa Esther Shezimna Es Haman. Why is it? What did Esther see that she felt it appropriate to invite Haman? I mean, why couldn't she just go to Ahasuerus, tell him the story, and convince him to change otherwise? So the Gemara answers not one answer, not two answers. Page after, it concludes with 12 answers. He counts up 12 answers that the Gemara gives as to why Ahasuerus, why Esther thought it necessary to have Haman at the party. And the Gemara actually concludes, and that I put on the page, Ashechei Rabba Baravu Eliyahu. Now one day Rabba Baravu was walking around, and he happened to come across Eliyahu Hanavi. So Eliyahu Hanavi, he knows a lot of, he might know what the right answer is. So yes, and by the way, why did she do this? You know, Eliyahu, you were there or something. So Kaman Chazya Esther v'Avdahachi. Why did Esther, what Esther see in order to go ahead and do this? So Amar Lai, so Eliyahu responded by saying, K'chulu Tanai b'chul Amorai. Like all the Tanaim said and like all the Amoraim said. I mean, there are 12 answers given to why Esther decided to invite Haman to the party. They're all right. They're all included in the reading. So what was her reasoning? So you could divide them up into the different characters that are supposed to be impacted. They're all these I mentioned in the Gemara. She wanted to perhaps scare Ahasuerus. She wanted Ahasuerus to think, and perhaps after the first couple prakim, Ahasuerus is being a little bit isolated. They're very scared about Ahasuerus, and it could be when he gives the ring over to Haman, he's actually giving over rulership of the kingdom. Ahasuerus is going to stay in the background, and Haman is going to run the show. Right? But however, whenever you have that type of situation, oh, don't worry, I'll be in charge, you stay in the back, so whoever that original leader is going to become very suspicious as to what's going on. Whenever you have a leader who's going to be a figurehead, and someone else is actually going to make decisions, they're always going to be suspicious about that. Right? That's A. Another thing that we don't know right now is what's Esther's standing with Ahasuerus. Right? Esther doesn't exactly know where she is holding. So she wants to, so why is that? So it could be that Ahasuerus might have even been suspicious of Esther. Right? Who knows where Esther is? So Esther needs Haman there, and Esther wants to exploit that in order to continue to make Ahasuerus more and more nervous. Another thing the Gemara says is Esther wants the Jewish people to be scared. As the people are going to pray more. Why? Because it's obviously going to be covered on Haman's Twitter feed that he's being invited to this party with Esther and Ahasuerus, and he probably took an Instagram pic right beforehand, right? I'm going out, and everybody knows about this. Jewish people are like, what's going on here? Why is Esther seem to be in cahoots with Haman? We have to be more and more scared. So she's exploiting the Jewish people in order to get them to daven more. Perhaps she's even exploiting Mordechai a little bit in order to get him to daven more. So on one hand, she's exploiting Ahasuerus, because Ahasuerus is very nervous. She's exploiting Haman because she's pumping up Haman. Haman thinks, well, I'm being invited to think. Perhaps Esther's even seeing my side, and maybe we're going to team up in order to take down Ahasuerus, something along those lines. Right? And she's exploiting the Jewish people's nervous in order to get tefillah to happen. So what do you have? You have a plan of Esther, and you have tefillos towards Hashem, and then Hashem also adds in a little bit of an ingredient as well. What was Hashem's ingredient? So between the fourth parak and the seventh parak, when Esther actually reveals Haman, what Haman is and what he's up to, so a very important thing occurs. Ahasuerus is up late at night. Ahasuerus finds out that I was once saved by somebody and never repaid them back. I might need that person now. And he also kind of catches Haman rummaging around his backyard, where she's not sure exactly what Haman is doing there. So you add that ingredient into the picture, so that then sets the scene for later. So you have, on one hand, the balance of taking action. Esther certainly took action. action, meaning even without that miraculous event Achashverosh being up all night and having to save, etc. Right? The story could have happened. We don't really know, but it could have taken place in that way. The Jewish people still could have been saved. But you add in the tefillah and you add in Hashem's involvement, so then you have a great... So the story works out. Okay? But if you take a step back, we have to understand, okay, but what... So that's how it works out, and that's how he... Right? Jasper goes, that's what he says. He goes, I mean, that's really our source of faith in the 20th century, and then he actually goes on the whole discussion about the birth of the state of Israel. You have to see all the human actions and also see Hashem's involvement. But take a step back and say, okay, but what was the Havaminas? What was the original thought of both Esther and Mordechai? Perhaps that helps, the way that's approached also helps give us insight into this discussion. So if we think about Esther versus Mordechai, which one of them, and you take God out of the picture, which one of them was being more realistic in terms of Esther versus Mordechai? Right? Right. Esther, not only because she's a woman, right, but also just because, right, but also because of the way the story is out. Mordechai is telling her to do something which sounds very risky. Right? It's very risky. She goes in, the entire connection, the entire inn that Mordechai has into the palace could be wiped out with one false move, and that move is exactly what he's telling Esther to make, right? The rule is, everybody knows, if you go into the king and you're unannounced, right, it's like trying to get into
the White House
without an invitation, right? Hi, I'm here. Yeah. I'm just trying to get in, right? You need to be invited beforehand, and that's a security precaution which Achashverosh is holding very firm on at that point, right? And everybody knew, by the way, that Esther came from, but we didn't really know where Esther came from, right? Esther is not one of his insiders. Esther is kind of an outsider. Mordechai panicked right away. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. I mean, right. So Esther's approach is, I have time. That was exactly Esther's approach. Esther's approach is, I have time. And not only that, Mordechai, when he's complaining to Esther, what's his main argument to complain to Esther?
You're going to get it too.
A, you're going to get it too, right? He has no basis for that. And B, right, which is in some ways the most meaningful statement of the Megillah, but in some ways it's the most... like, not useful statement of the Gemara. He says, who says, Umi Yodea im le'ez kazos higas lamachus? Right? This was the purpose that you became queen. Now, how does Mordechai know that that was the purpose, that it was for this purpose that Esther became queen? So,
not a problem. Mordechai says that a person that entered one's own household suddenly, how much less so the house, more so the house of someone else, how could Mordechai have this happen that she just immediately birthed?
Okay. All right. Good. So Mordechai's, his main argument is, in a way, a supernatural one, right? It's fate, right? Obviously, Hashem is running the world, and obviously this is what you need to do. And Esther kind of tones that down a little bit. So the question isn't so much on Esther. Esther has a plan. Esther's plan is, I'm going to wait at some point in the next couple of months. Achashverosh is going to invite me in. And at that point, I'll bring this up, and that'll be our agenda item, and we'll discuss, and everything will be taken care of. We'll let diplomacy run its course. While Mordechai is the one who is very uptight, and he is ready to say, you better do this. It's fate has it that you should go ahead and do this. I remember, some might recall, the Mets used to be a good baseball team, and with the previous World Series, when they made it to the World Series against the Yankees, I think, and then the next year, I think, when they played the Cardinals in the championship in the playoffs, and it was Game 7, and it was 2-1 Cardinals in the ninth, or 3-1 Cardinals in the ninth inning, and the Mets sent up, Willie Randolph was the manager at the time, that was pretty much it for him. But William Randolph was the manager at the time, and the Mets put a player on first, and they put up a player to bat, Kurt Floyd. What is his name? Floyd was his last name, who pretty much had no knees left. He couldn't run. All he could really do was hit home runs. All he could do it, right? And that's pretty much what he was putting him up, hoping to hit a home run. But that's not really what the Mets needed. They had one out. They had, I think, one or two runners on base. A base hit would have served them better. Well, a home run would have won the game. But the statistics probably led the other way. And I remember Mike Francesa saying the next day, he says, it could be that the manager just believed in fate. Why did he put him up? Because the Mets were supposed to go to the World Series. And something dramatic, obviously, was going to happen in order to get them there. So sometimes you believe in that fate, and it could lead to it.
I guess that worked for the Eagles, right?
Yes, it did.
Well, I guess so. I'm not sure you could point to a play. Somebody made a comment that the Saints had this miraculous, not the Saints, the Vikings had this miraculous win. So they had a miraculous win. The Falcons had the ball. They threw the ball four times to Julio Jones and didn't get in. Who do you think had God on their side more? Right? Anyways, fine.
Could you give me some water? We're talking baseball.
What? Water. Do I think so?
No, God watches curls.
So that's the question. Was Mordechai letting his emotions, so to speak, get ahead of him? So the way the Mefarshim deal with it is perhaps they shifted around a little bit and tried to. There's three perhaps approaches as to why Mordechai was saying to do what he was saying to do. So one approach is to say Mordechai happens to be a Navi, right? So even if they're complaining, Mordechai doesn't invoke that here, but it could just be that Mordechai knew. Mordechai had a nevuah, and we could trust Mordechai perhaps more than we would trust the other people. It was the end of the prophetic era, but it wasn't the end. It wasn't over yet. And Mordechai could have just gotten a nevuah, and that could just be the way to answer the question. So Mordechai had a nevuah, and that was, now, if he did, maybe he could have included that in his statement to, shouldn't have said, Umiyu dea im le'ez kazos. Who knows if this is the time? He should have said, Aniyu dea shete ez kazos. Right? I know that it's the time. And that perhaps would have made things a little bit clearer. So that's one approach to be made. So another comment is two things might be going on here. And that is, and I thank Rabbi Josh Flug for bringing this to my attention, two comments made by commentary made known as the Yosef Lekach. What is the Yosef Lekach? So he happens to be a very interesting personality. He lived in the 1500s. His name is Rav Eliezer Ashkenazi. He was if you're Ashkenazi, where does it mean you come from? Of course, he's Sephardic. So he grew up in the Sephardic lands, but made his way into Ashkenazi Europe, Poland, and Bohemia, etc., with his Sephardic flair. So he got himself into a couple of dust-ups with the rabbinic establishment in Europe during that time. That's just what you find in the Wikipedia article. I'm sure if you find more, I'm sure there's more out there as to what you could discover about Rav Eliezer Ashkenazi. So he first points to on that pasuk in Le'ez Kazo. So Rashi says, "Mi yode im Le'ez Kazo yigas lamachus." Says Rashi, "Umi yode im yachbo tzbach hamelach l'shana haba'a shuz man harega." That the king is getting more and more isolated. Who knows if the king is ever going to call you in? You don't exactly know where your standing is with the king. And who knows whether you're actually going to have a chance to do this. So you need to go ahead and do this. As the king is becoming more and more isolated, he might not trust you either. And you might not have that opportunity. Perhaps maybe it is better to apologize and ask permission. Right? It could be apologizing might work out better for you than asking permission. That's what he says on the Ba'ud Ratza Mordechai Lahachri, actually, Bechlal Hasakan Var Miyodim Le'ez Kazos Gazamachut, Miyodim Le'ez Kazos Shahaya Sof Hashana. Who knows if at that time, who knows if at the time when this is actually going to come, in a year from now, who knows if you will actually have that opportunity to speak to the king? So therefore, you better go ahead and do it now. And the second comment he has is that maybe the reason why Mordechai didn't wait is that he just said, in terms of strategery, this might actually be a better thing to do. Rather than put it on an agenda item, which the king will get in an email the day before and may or may not read, better for you to just burst in and say, I have an emergency, we need to talk right now, put everything aside, etc., and that might have a greater impact on it. So those are two approaches that the Yosef Lekach brings. Right? Number one, well, Mordechai told him to do it. Yes, it's a risk. risk, but it's a risk that you have to take because it might your percentages of success may be going down. You might be trending downwards rather than trending upwards at this time. So that's number one. And then number two is that maybe this is the way to actually gain the greatest impact. If you go in now, so then you'll be successful as opposed to later on. He'll see the urgency now as opposed to seeing the urgency later. So but what is he doing? What is the Yosef Lekach doing? And other Mephorshim take these kinds of texts as well. They try to explain what Mordechai was thinking with logic. What are they doing? They're actually taking the bitachon out and taking and moving the action. They're explaining why Mordechai was also a logical approach. Right? It was also a logical approach. And because it can't just be that Mordechai was, well, we're going to trust in Hashem. There has to be logic that's going to be included in it as well. So the message here is that in a, you know, certainly in a post-prophetic world, but even in a prophetic world, the taking action does come, really does come first. Now, there has to be tefillah that's included, meaning Esther manipulated it so that there would be more tefillah for her, and that there would be more of Hashem's involvement. We are going to make ourselves better. So we saw that it did come true, and we thank Hashem for when it came true, but the planning really starts from what's going to be best for us, and we ask Hashem that Hashem is going to help us be able to lead us through. For a further source on it, I listened to a shiur. I've been spending a lot of time in the car in the last couple of weeks. I listened to a shiur from Rabbi Tzvi Rum about the three oaths that are taken, about the approach, the Gimel Shvuos, about that B'nai Yisrael shouldn't be able to go back and conquer, they shouldn't stand up together and conquer the land of Israel without the permission of the nations. So how that plays in terms of he has an amazing approach, I found, in terms of this balance as well, bringing it into the modern era. How do we approach that idea, but yet still taking into account the reality that we have to live with today? So we'll just stop here. Enjoy lunch, and thank you everybody for coming. I guess we'll try to do this before Pesach again.
So what if she didn't take the 3 days to fast?